Marcy Richards straddled a heap of blankets in the back of the open truck and watched the road unroll behind. She gave an impatient wiggle. Sugar Puss, how can you chew your cud without even a quiver when we're almost there? The placid black-and-white goat tethered beside her crunched on rhythmically. She doesn't care, said Betsy. That's because she doesn't know what fun it is at the lake, said Thad. Betsy kicked off her shoes and wiggled her knobby toes. I'm not going to wear shoes again until the day we go home. And I'm going to swim across the lake, Thad vowed, this year for sure. I'm going to run out to the end of the pier and jump in with all my clothes on as soon as we get there, Betsy declared. I'm going to see how the wigwam weathered the winter, Thad said. I'm going to, Marcy began, but was cut short by Thad. There it is, he pointed frantically through a rift in the trees. The lake, the lake. For an instant, a shimmering blue patch was visible against a juniper-dotted knoll. I can hardly wait, Betsy gave herself a frenzied hug. There's the roll of mailboxes, cried Thad. There's the turn in to the lake road, Marcy added, and they rolled on the blankets in a delirium of joy. The truck drove slowly onto a gravel lane. There's the buffalo burying ground. There's the sunken forest. There's the swamp. There's the chipmunk tree. Duck! And the end of the road. We're here! We're here!
The author of that anticipation was Jacqueline Jackson. But it could be you. WSSR Radio at Sangamon State University brings you Reading and Writing and Radio, a program on the process of writing creatively. Conducting the program is children's author Jacqueline Jackson.
All of us have had the experience of looking forward to something, of saying or of thinking, I can hardly wait. We've all of us known the intensity of the feeling, how we can get almost sick with looking forward. We're all keyed up. We can't concentrate. This experience, anticipation, what is it? Sometimes, as in the passage I read from the start of The Pale Faces, it's a known good. It's something that we've experienced before that we are confident is going to be happy again, and so therefore we look forward to it. Later on in The Pale-Faced Redskins, Marcy says, this was the moment she had been waiting for all day, all winter, to be by herself, surrounded with the sight and feel and sound and smell of the sky blue water. Now across the lake appeared the yellow rim of a full moon, the Lord that all the golden light was heralding, and at his arrival, a golden carpet was thrown across the water for him to walk down, straight to the wigwam in the willow patch. Back again. Last week, school. This week, the lake. Already last week seemed years away, and her happiness almost unbearable. The whole summer stretched gloriously before them all, like the golden path from her feet to the moon. Some dark eddies swirled into the gold and made it narrower. That was the war and the Boy Scouts and other unknown dangers they would meet. But the golden path wriggled past the dark spots and flowed bright and sparkling to the very end. That was how it would be. Marcy felt this way about a place. We often feel this way, too, about people. When we've had a happy time with them before and we hear they're coming again, we give a whoop and we rush to prepare. And it makes the cleaning and the cooking and the picking up of one's room all the more joyful because we're doing it with a happy heart for a purpose. Grandma is coming, or some friends that we dearly love. And so we rush to get not only ourselves ready, but everything all around. I had an uncle that told fabulous ghost stories, and so when we heard that Uncle Will was coming, we got ourselves ready in a hurry and anticipated the ghost stories that Uncle Will was going to tell us. There are times when we miss the anticipation. Suppose that somebody you love shows up very suddenly. Then you're happy to see them, but you've missed that period of looking forward. In the book The Little Prince by the Frenchman Antoine de Saint-Exupéry, there is this passage. The fox is talking to the little prince. It would have been better to come at the same hour. If, for example, you came at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, then at 3 o'clock I shall begin to be happy. I shall feel happier and happier as the hour advances. At 4 o'clock, I shall already be worrying and jumping about. But if you come at just any time, I shall never know at what hour my heart is to be ready to greet you. Other times, there are other results to our anticipation. Suppose there's been a place that you've loved, and you return to it, and it has changed, or you have changed, and you feel let down and unhappy. I had a very big disappointment when I returned to Pleasant Lake. I had written the Paleface Redskins about this lake that I had loved as a child, and the lake itself was very much the same as when I had last seen it some 10 or 15 years before. But the one spot that was the hub of my existence there at that lake, the willow patch in which we had our wigwam and sallied forth on our Indian raids, someone had taken a bulldozer and had pushed over the whole willow patch and the whole hill into the swamp behind it, I think trying to make more land on which to build cottages or something, so that that one spot was a nasty, ugly gash on the side of the lake instead of the beautiful spot that had been the scene of so many happinesses of my childhood. Sometimes the result of anticipation is strange. We think we're going to like something, and then something happens so that something else takes its place. A story I have of that is a college student who told me about when she was a little girl and she had been promised a trip to the circus. Her uncle was going to take her, and he didn't come, and he didn't come, and she became more and more excited and more impatient, and her mother finally said, "Well, why don't you go out into the yard to wait?" So she went out into the backyard, and she sat down, and somehow all the excitement began to ebb away, and she became very peaceful inside, and she noticed things around her in a way that she had never noticed before. She noticed exactly what a leaf looked like, and she studied a bug, and she thought about the sky. And when her uncle finally came for her, and she had been some half hour in this sort of in-between times trance, she was almost sorry to go to the circus. And she told me, "You know, my memory now isn't of the circus. When I think of the circus, I think of that perfect half hour before I ever went to the circus. And my memory of the circus is that I had too much cotton candy and there was too much confusion and I got sick to my stomach." An experience I had of looking forward to something good was when I had my tonsils out. My older sisters had told me that it was great fun at the hospital, that you got all the pop you wanted and all the ice cream that you wanted, and I was greatly looking forward to having my tonsils out. Those were the days when they automatically took your tonsils out, you know, when you were 5 or 6. But nobody had bothered to tell me that the tonsils episode was accompanied by a very sore throat, and that when you tried to drink the pop and tried to eat the ice cream, that it was very painful and that it was not at all pleasurable, so that my trip to the hospital turned out to be far from what I had anticipated. Another story I have about disappointments after anticipation is a very sad story. When we lived in Ohio, there was a little girl that lived on the same block that we did that was not popular. She was a little different, a little strange. The girls at her school didn't much care for her. And one day she showed up at our house with her face shining and glowing. She had been invited to a birthday party, and she wondered if she could buy one of my books to take for a birthday present. I asked her which one she wanted, and she selected the Paleface Redskins because she had been playing Indians after reading that book in the backyards of our block for the past year. And Mimi took that Paleface Redskins and departed to go off to her party with her face just shining. Later, I heard from her mother that there hadn't been any party, that the girls in her school had dreamed up the party for a joke and had invited Mimi and played this terrible, terrible trick on her. It always makes me very upset when I think about that story and the cruelty that people can visit on each other, thinking that it's fun or funny. Another area of disappointment after anticipation that I've had is in the movie version of a book. I remember how excited we were as kids that The Wizard of Oz was going to be made into a book. And then we were disappointed that Judy Garland was going to be Dorothy because she seemed so old. And once we saw the movie, we were even more disappointed because here was Judy Garland looking very teenage-ish with bosoms, you know, and Dorothy was supposed to be a little girl, 7, 8, 9 years old. In a similar way, I was disappointed by Mary Poppins. I thought that Mary Poppins perhaps could be a good movie because it was a musical, it was a take-off on the story. But Julie Andrews shouldn't have been Mary Poppins. Mary Poppins is very tart and vain. She's older than Julie Andrews, and she is not sweet and sugary. So that to see her playing the part of Mary Poppins was a disappointment if you'd read the book and loved the real Mary Poppins. In the same way, Winnie the Pooh, which I didn't bother to see, I'm sure would have been a disappointment, and Dr. Doolittle, W.C. Fields, if you've seen the old movies, he should have been Dr. Doolittle. There are times when our hearts are all ready for something, that fate comes in, that the event itself never comes off. The weather. If we're having a special picnic, a party, a hayride that depends on the weather, and then that doesn't come off. That's a sad event. There was a funny paper column once where Dot and Ditto in High and Lois, Dot is a horseback rider and taking lessons, and here was a rainy day, and she was weeping and crying and beating her feet in a tantrum because she couldn't have her horseback ride on account of the weather. And her father comes into her bedroom and says to her, "Well, I'm disappointed too. I was going to play golf today, and now I can't do it." And she sits up all tear-streaked on the bed and says, "But all you were going to do was to hit a little ball around with a stick." So that his disappointment, you see, shouldn't be nearly as bad as hers. I remember as a child hearing a story about one of my ancestors, a great-great-grandfather, who, the story was, would say that the family was going to do something, and everybody would get all ready and be all full of anticipation and eagerness, and then he would come in and say he'd changed his mind, they weren't going to go. Now, this probably only happened once or twice, but hearing that story was enough for me to type my great-great-grandfather or whatever ancestor it was as a real villain, a demon, that would get everybody's hearts ready and then, sadistically it would seem, would tell everybody that no, they couldn't go. And I think that the reason that story came down is probably that some child was so disappointed that he wasn't able to go. Possibly the grandfather had a very real reason why they couldn't go. The horse might have been sick or something of that sort. But here this great-grandfather has come down to me in this awful way because he spoiled somebody's anticipation. That reminds me of a little character test that we sometimes use on a person. We say, "Would you rather be all ready to go and then not go, or not be ready to go and then go?" I think it tells something about you as to which of those two that you would choose. I have a friend who says that he doesn't anticipate anything, because he has learned not to, because then he isn't let down. He said he learned this as a child in New York City, that they lived on the beach near Coney Island, and they got to see the carnival there for all the sham and dishonesty that it was, and how the people would try to get the maximum amount of money with the least effort in the shortest amount of time, and that all the boys around there would learn which Dodgem car would give you the longest ride and which were the greatest gyps and this sort of thing. I think we also learn from advertising that lots of the advertising promises that get your hopes up and your hearts up are shattered when the item comes, especially stuff that comes over the children's programs. This was true when I was little. We would send for that magic spy ring. And when it would come, it would be something that would be easily broken, and that all the magic that went along with that spy ring was in the talk about it and not in the actual use of the ring. There's one other sort of anticipation that we could talk about, a sort of reverse anticipation, which is called apprehension, when you're highly worried about what's going to happen. dread is even a stronger word than apprehension. And there are times when we apprehend that something is going to happen, that we dread that something is going to happen, and then it turns out pretty good, much better than we expected. I think you'll discover that in some instances that you're not always powerless in a situation of anticipation. You can help to create what you anticipate. If the weather is bad and a good time is called off, your attitude might be able to help create a good time where you are for the people around you. Or if you go to a party and it turns out not to be any fun, you're there. You can pitch in. You can help make it the kind of fun party that you had anticipated that it was going to be. So today, let's write down some of our experiences with anticipation. When you looked forward to something, and it was even better than you expected. When you looked forward, and it turned out to be a disappointment. When did something else emerge as better than what you were anticipating? Did you ever dread something, and it turned out to be happy? Tell us about how you've gotten your heart all ready, and then what happened to it.
WSSR Radio at Sangamon State University has brought you reading and writing and radio. Send your writings to Jacqueline Jackson, Sangamon State University, Springfield, Illinois, 62708.